This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, we're going to get into the draft and the combine, which we're very excited about, especially the combine coming up this week. But we did want to mention off the top of the show that we know that the story surrounding the Patriots right now has to do with Robert Kraft and his legal situation. We're not going to talk too much about it, but obviously that's kind of where the limelight is right now. But in Indianapolis, I'm sure there'll be plenty of conversations about that among the other owners and general managers and reporters that are going to be down there. So we'll touch on some of that at a later date. But for now, first, let's start with a little bit of a combine preview. I love the combine. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year. It obviously doesn't rival the games for me, but I just love getting all these guys out there, and you kind of get everybody under one roof for a couple of days.
Yeah. As far as the combine's concerned, the thing that's sort of interesting with the Patriots is we've learned over the years kind of sort of the stats that they look for. You know, with the three cone drill and stuff like that.
They have thresholds. There's definitely patterns that you can look at with a lot of these drills and pick out guys in certain drills that they want to look at for certain positions. And those guys that excel in those drills, they end up drafting a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it's, and like going back to the three cone drill, it works for almost every position. You know, like it's not as important for like quarterback, but even for linemen and stuff like that, it's something that you come back to with them. So it's fun. The thing I like about the combine is film study can be so subjective, right?
You
can see things in guys that you wouldn't see in others. Whereas the combine, it's numbers, man.
Yeah,
you know, it's really cut and dry, but also the numbers can be deceiving because, you know, I keep going back to this, but remember when Dalvin Cook ran a 4.5?
Yeah.
Everybody was like, oh man.
Everybody freaked out.
He's so slow.
Yeah.
And then like he comes out and he's like, he's running by guys in the NFL. So you have to pay attention to it, but you also have to look at it within context, and you can't, you know, use it only as something and not look at the film. And it's fun to have the numbers, but you do have to really sort of take them within context.
Right. I mean, sure. Guys like Colton Miller, for example, had like the best combine ever for an offensive lineman last year. And certainly looked like a reach at the time when the Raiders picked him and was a reach on the field. So guys like that, you know, these workout warriors can perform really well in the combine. The Patriots have one on their roster they got this year in Obi Melifonwu, who is, you know, one of the better broad jumpers in the history of the combine and would have been an Olympics, you know, record breaker if he had done the broad jump in an Olympic Games. But obviously, you know, there's more to football than that. But I think the biggest thing for me with the numbers themselves is just looking at kind of thresholds and putting people into certain brackets where if you're a skill player, if you're a receiver, or running back or something like that, you want to be running in the 4.5s or lower, right? When you get guys that, especially guys that are supposed to be faster running in the 4.6s or even the 4.7s, you're like, okay, wait a second. You know, what did I see on tape and why isn't he running faster? And you can kind of, you know, figure out, does the tape match what you're seeing in the drills? Right? Like this guy's supposed to be really quick. Let's take, you know, Hunter Renfrow, for example. He's supposed to be really quick. If he goes out there and runs a over 7 second three cone drill, we're going to say, wait a second, how quick is he? You know, that kind of thing. So it kind of confirms what you're seeing on tape, or it tells you that what you're seeing on tape might not be real. And you kind of have to go from there. The other thing that I love about the combine is the actual on-field drills themselves, because first of all, with the quarterbacks, you kind of figure out who the alpha is, right? Like, right. Who's the guy that everybody's following? Last year, it was certainly Baker Mayfield. Like, everybody was kind of in tow with Baker, and it was Baker's show for the most part. The other drill that I love is when they send the wide receivers and the tight ends through pass-catching drills, you really get to see who has natural hands. Because right. you got guys throwing right. football that aren't Tom Brady and Drew Brees and these, you know, really accurate quarterbacks. There's going to be some throws outside the frame. There's going to be some throws where they're running full speed and they're going to have to catch the ball over their heads or behind them or whatever. And you can really tell who the guys are that pluck the ball out of the air. Yeah. So I think that is really cool too. And you kind of can see the guys that are smooth, you know, who moves smoothly and has, you know, good hip flexibility and able to shift in and out of their cuts. And you kind of get that feel for it too. So the on-field drills, I really think, are important for the skill players and maybe for some of the defensive backs as well. Not as much for the linemen. They don't really, you know, tell you much about the linemen. But I really like it for the quarterbacks. I really like it for the skill players and the corners and the safeties. And then obviously, like I said, you got to confirm what you see on tape with some of these guys. And some of these guys that we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about tight ends here in a second, like Irv Smith Jr., for example. He doesn't really pop with explosiveness, right? Right. You know, he's not like really the best burner or has a huge burst or anything like that at the line of scrimmage like some of these other guys do. But if he goes to the combine and he's running fast, then all of a sudden he becomes a surefire first round pick.
Right, right.
So that's kind of what you get out of the combine.
Right. And I remember too, the thing about Mayfield last year was people were sort of undecided on what his arm strength was like.
Yes.
He really threw the ball hard. And that's really hard. And I think that definitely helped him too.
Lamar Jackson did not throw the ball hard.
Right, right.
He threw 49 miles an hour, and that took him off a lot of teams' boards automatically, and is why he didn't, you know, went 32nd or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, and like you said, those catching drills, those look so difficult too.
Yeah,
you know, when they're turning around, going one side to the next, and they're catching and dropping it. You know, it's a pretty good separator. They've done a good job coming up with them and stuff like that. But yeah, but you know, when we were looking at these tight ends, I guess transitioning into that, like, it's been a pretty well talked about position group already. It's gotten a ton of hype, and I think you and I pretty much both agree that it might not be quite as good as some people are hyping it up to be, but there are some really good prospects in here.
Yeah, my issue with some of the conversations around the tight end group is that people act like it's this really deep class, and I don't know if it's necessarily that deep. I think that really there's four guys that we're going to talk about here tonight that are at the top of the draft: Hockson, Noah Fant, Irv Smith, and I'll throw Jay Sternberger in there from Texas A&M, who I think are really good tight end prospects. The top three guys that I mentioned, I think, are probably going to be first-round picks, or at least top 50 picks, and those guys I think are really, really good. Once you get past that line, I don't know if it's as good as some people are making it sound. And if you remember last year, that tight end class was pretty good last year too. Like, you know, Mark Andrews and Hayden Hurst and a lot of really good prospects. Obviously, Gesicki. I don't know. I don't know if this group – I think Hockson is setting it apart for everybody, though. I think that's the biggest thing, is that he is, in my opinion, one of the better tight end prospects in a long, long time to come out, and he's getting that hype right away. You know, guys like Gronk obviously had the injuries. Travis Kelce was a guy that fell. George Kittle is a guy that fell. There hasn't been a guy that, and I think that those guys kind of paved the way a little bit for Hockson to be this, you know, maybe even a top 15, top 10 pick. Top 10 is probably a little too generous, but I think that he could go top 15.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it really is depending on, you know, how much somebody really wants a guy. And I feel like, you know, you watch his film, and I remember we were sort of texting about him before, and you were telling me about him before I sort of knew too much. And at first I was watching, and I was a little harsh on his blocking technique and stuff like that. But then I was comparing it to some of the other guys in the draft, and I was like, all right, well, he's probably the best blocker out of these out of these prospects, and he shows great effort. He can play, and here's the thing about him that I like the most is that, you know, Iowa does a great job of moving their guys around with the tight ends, and they're using them and all that. But you can put him really anywhere. You can put him in an H-back role. You can put him in line. You can put him in the slot. You can put him out wide. You can really put him anywhere, and he's effective. And the thing that really popped out to me was how much attention he drew from defenses. There was, I think, a touchdown pass. I forget in which game now, but where he was going up at either the seam or somewhere on the left side, and it drew the safety, and the wide receiver was wide open just because of all the attention that he was getting, and he scored a touchdown. So this is not just somebody that it can make plays for you, but he can open up passing lanes for other guys on your team, and that's got to be really exciting for anybody that looks at him.
Yeah, he's an ultimate chess piece at this position. And we're talking about TJ Hockson from Iowa. I just wanted to mention that real quick. I didn't know because we were just mentioning him by his last name. He, to me, I had a tough time finding any real flaws in his game. Like, I think his blocking technique needs work, but he tries so hard at it, and he finishes so well. I mean, there's some, like, offensive line pancakes on his film where he's just burying guys into the ground. And and he's really a dominating presence. His burst off the line of scrimmage when he releases into his route. I mean, he's just getting by linebacker the second level with ease. You know, you really can't just kind of match him up man to man with a linebacker and hope that you're going to stay in front of him because he's just going to run right by you. He's got some wiggle to him. He really is, I think, the ultimate tight end prospect. Like, he can do it all. The one thing that I kind of, you know, when you talk about players like this, what is his one trait that is elite, right? Like, it's like he's good at everything, but he could be one of those players, and this is playing devil's advocate, of course, he could be one of those players that is just good at everything but not great at anything.
Right.
And that is kind of worrisome when you do these draftings because, like, his teammate, Noah Fon, who we're going to talk about in a second, is an absolutely freak athlete. Like, he's a matchup nightmare for anybody because of his athleticism. Hockson is not quite as athletic as he is, but he's more polished, and he does a little bit more than Font does in terms of blocking. So I think that's the biggest fear that I have with him, and maybe teams might have with him where he could fall to the Patriots at 32, is that what is his one trait that's going to make him, you know, elite? And I don't know if he has one other than maybe kind of like just a size, speed, explosiveness combination where he's just a big dude that can really run.
Right. And that's – and if you want to transition into Font a little bit.
Yeah.
The thing I love about Font is he just he looks the part.
Yeah. And he's
if you want somebody to be a immediate NFL red zone weapon – He's the guy out of these tight ends.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like, I mean, he's just huge. And, but that, you know, there's, but again, he's not, you would expect a guy who is big as him, who is as big as he is, to be a better blocker than Hockenson, but he's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But still, if you got a guy like Font, right, he's so big. He's so athletic. You put him in the red zone, and he's your target, and he's the guy who's demanding extra attention in that area of the field.
Yeah,
you can't single cover him with most defenders. I think he's somebody that's got that elite skill in the NFL almost right away if you have him as a sort of like a jump ball guy or just a big target in the red zone. Those are hard to come by, and I think he's one of those guys.
Yeah, I would assume that he's going to run somewhere in the 4.5s.
Yeah.
Which at his size is just ridiculous. And the other thing that really stands out about him is his catch radius. I mean, you throw anything like within a couple of yards of him, he's going to bring it down, and he can go up above the defense too, and he wins those jump balls. The guy that he reminds me a lot of is David Njoku. They're very similar kind of athletic guys that maybe don't have the best hands quite yet and maybe need to work on their blocking technique a little bit, but in terms of just sheer athleticism, they're going to win at the NFL level right away off of that. So the other thing I really like about Font is that you can flex him out wide, and he's almost just like a wide receiver out there. He's got a lot of Evan Ingram comps, but I think he's a better inline player than Ingram is. Ingram's really a receiver. You know, he's really like a slot receiver. Fon is, I think, a little bit better of a true tight end than Ingram is, but he has that type of route running ability and that type of speed and athleticism. Those two guys, Hockson and Fon, I think are in their own category. Ironically, they were on the same collegiate team. I often wonder, like, if they weren't both on Iowa and they each kind of got to, you know, be on their own spotlight, how it would have gone for them, you know, because their numbers were good in college, but they certainly, you know, weren't these crazy numbers. But if they had been on their own teams and all those targets had gone to one of them instead of both of them sharing it, I mean, these guys would have been off the charts production-wise. So I think that both of these guys, if the Patriots do want to go tight end at 32, make a whole lot of sense. And if Hockson's off the board, then you can go Font and vice versa.
Yeah, I think, and it's funny, like you said, they're on the same college team. But you know what? You know, numbers aside, I think them both being on Iowa is a plus. Because they really know how to use tight ends there.
It's impressive because a lot of college teams don't.
No, they don't.
I obviously watched like 15 or 16 tight ends in this class because it's a, you know, big position for the Patriots probably moving forward. And just the usage of some of these guys by offensive coordinators in college was like perplexing. It's like 6'6" matchup nightmare block on every play. It's like, right, you know, having him be in line, you're not really using him as a matchup weapon.
No, yeah. I mean, like, we talk about this a lot, but the college game is, you know, so spread heavy that, you know, a lot of tight ends have been moved to just like de facto fullback, H-back type. And they don't really move around that much and they're not really involved in the passing game as much as they really could be. But, you know, some schools do it and it's a good matchup problem.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. A school that does it well too, obviously Alabama with Irv Smith Jr. And I kind of agreed with some of the things that you said about Irv when we were texting about this. Just, I don't know how good of an athlete he is. I know he's a good athlete, but I don't know if I don't think he's in Font and Hockenson's category of athleticism. Because when I watch him, especially at the top of the route, he doesn't have that snappiness at the top of the route where he's instantly separating when he hits his break. So that's one thing I'm, you know, that kind of puts him out of that first round category for me. But at the same time, he's smooth. He knows what he's doing out there. He's a great blocker. And he's really honed in on the details with his route running this past season and really has become a very detail-oriented route runner and really knows how to beat coverage.
Right. The thing I like about him is that he's got a high floor.
Yeah. You know exactly what he's going to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, the worry is, you know, how much better is he going to get? Because he's already, you know, it seems like he already plays with great technique, especially with his blocking. I don't have any qualms with, you know, how he blocks guys or anything like that. I just don't know if what you're going to get 5 years from now is going to be any better than what you get now with him. I think he's a good player, but as far as when you look at the other two, the guys from Iowa and some of the other guys we might be talking about later, I don't know if you're going to get somebody who's, you know, like a real star in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the things that just watching him in this past season, his route running really has improved. He's really good at kind of shifting speeds within his route and changing up his route speeds and also kind of knowing how to beat different coverages, stepping on guys' toes, breaking at the top of the route, that kind of thing. He's one of those guys that I'm really interested to see this week because I want to see how fast he really is and if he can keep up with some of these other guys that can really run in this class. Because when you watch him, and also you should say too, you know, when you watch a lot of his games, you're watching him against really good competition.
Yeah, that's
true. You're watching him against Clemson's and Georgia's and stuff like that, where they have a bunch of NFL guys in those secondaries.
Yes.
So he's already going up against NFL caliber talent, which is, you know, obviously good because he already has that experience, but it's also, you know, the separation's not going to be the same when you're going up against the corner that's going to be playing in the NFL in 2 years.
Right.
So there's some of that as well with him when you watch the Alabama guys. That's certainly something that you have to keep in mind. But
yeah.
I think he's, like you said, I think he's just a really solid player right now that if you drafted him, I don't know if you're drafting him in the first round, but if you draft him, you're going to know exactly what you're getting, and you probably are getting a starting caliber tight end on day one. It's just a matter of, like you said, what's his ceiling? And I think that we're going to learn a lot about his ceiling this week and see if he times really well in some of the drills, especially the three cone and the 40, then you could be, and even the jumps too, where they show some of that explosiveness, you're going to see a whole different kind of viewpoint of him being a first round pick, I think.
Right.
Yeah. All right. The next guy here, Jay Sternberger from Texas A&M. I really like him for the Patriots a lot. He's not really as much of a blocker as some of these other guys that we're going to talk about, but he is a great receiver. I mean, he's just a natural. Like, you can just tell that the guy knows how to catch a ball.
Yeah,
and he knows how to get open, and he knows how, you know, what he's doing out there, and he's a really smooth receiver.
Yeah, I agree. He really took off this year, I think, and just like, you know, he gets open, he catches the ball. I don't think he's necessarily he's not somebody I necessarily want in line, right? You know, like, he's not.
Yeah, no, he's gonna get pushed around a little bit.
Yeah. So in that respect, I think that takes him down a notch from some of the other guys. But but as a receiver, you know, like, this guy is gonna be a weapon, right? I mean, he's played in a very good passing offense at Texas A&M this year. And he's, you know, I didn't see a lot of games where he was totally taken out of the game, even when he was one of the top options for that team. So, you know, teams were gearing defenses towards him and still giving up yards to him. So it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how he runs and what his times are compared to some of these other guys. But I think as far as his hands are concerned and stuff like that, I think you can be pretty confident that he's solid in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely more of a move tight end. He's not going to play in line. He's going to have trouble blocking guys and dealing with the power and at the point of attack of an NFL defensive lineman or linebacker or something like that to be a big factor as a blocker. But as a pass catcher, the first thing that stands out just from a Patriots perspective is he is an absolute nightmare on seam routes. Like, no one could cover him up the seam. No matter who they were playing, it really didn't matter. He had some insane production on seam routes last year. He's also fantastic after the catch. As a natural yak guy, goes right into yak mode, a great feel for it. He's keeps at that top speed, and he's also a big guy, so he's kind of like a tank in the open field, and he's tough to bring down when he gets up to that top speed. I just think that the question to me, first of all, you can get him a little bit later, which I think is something that maybe they look at. He's more going to be kind of in that late second, third round range, I would assume. And the second thing is the plan to completely move on from Gronkowski, or is the plan to pair somebody for the last couple of years of Gronkowski that has a skill set that kind of matches up well with him? Because if you put some of these other guys, if you draft like a guy in the first round, like a Hockson or a Font, you're saying that we're passing the torch, right?
Right.
You know, like, Gronk is done, whether it's this year or he's retiring now or he's retiring a year from now, you know, we're passing the torch to this guy to be our number one tight end. Whereas with Sternberger, you can pair those two together pretty nicely, I think.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
They're much different skill sets. They're different positions almost in a lot of ways. So yeah. I think that that's, you know, a really interesting kind of perspective to look at too. And I kind of like the idea. I love the tight end position. I think it's gotten super important over the last couple of years, obviously, with some of the, it's basically like having a number one wide receiver when you have a good tight end. But at the same time, to not invest in the line of scrimmage in the first round is very anti-Belichick, and it's very anti like what you're supposed to do.
Right.
From a team building aspect. So I almost like waiting because this is a pretty good class. And there's some guys here that we're going to talk about now that we've moved on from the top names that are going to be able to produce and contribute right away, where you can go defensive line in the first round and you can get kind of a blue chip defensive lineman, pass rusher, interior pass rusher, whatever the case may be, and wait on some of these pass catchers. Because if Gronk is coming back for 2019, it's not, you know, an immediate need, and the Patriots aren't going to draft on need really anyways. So I almost feel like from a pass perspective, they like to invest on the offensive line. If they didn't have, I know everyone's going to say, well, they picked a running back in the first round last year. Yeah, but if they only had one pick, they were picking Isaiah Wynn. And you know, they had the benefit of having two. This year they have a benefit of having a bunch of picks in the second and third round instead of two in the first.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think, you know, when you put it like that, it really just makes this decision tough now, because we don't really know what Gronk is doing. So
yeah,
so we'll see, you know.
Right, because if Gronk is retiring, then the whole conversation changes, because you need along with Julian Edelman to pair another bona fide blue chip receiver with Julian Edelman. Yeah. A guy that's going to be a matchup night problem that people are going to have to game plan for, that kind of thing. So it's definitely changes the conversation obviously completely. But this next guy, Caden Smith from Stanford, is another tight end prospect that we both really like. He is a big dude, has great hands, great catch radius, can really run routes really well and explode off the line of scrimmage, and he can block a little bit too. These Stanford guys, they're just fundamentally sound football players. Like, yeah. They really just, you know, you look at them and you're like, yeah, that guy can play football.
Yeah, and you know that Belichick sort of aligns with David Shaw in terms of how he likes that program.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they've done their homework on this kid. I really like it. I really like Smith. He catches the ball really fundamentally well. Like,
yeah,
he snatches it. You know, he's not a body catcher. Like, he makes really outstanding catches. He's got a huge radius. Like, I think he's another guy where, you know, he could be a very difficult guy to handle in the red zone.
Yep.
And if you know, and that's obviously huge. So, I mean, another guy that I wasn't crazy about as a blocker, though, you know, in terms of his effort on it, you know, maybe that was just my perspective, but
I think
he's, but again, he's another one of these guys that, if you want a receiver in this draft from the tight end position, he's a really high floor guy. Like, he's, you know, I mean, I don't know how he'll do in the combine or anything like that, but it looks to me like he, you know, is able to, you know, get to the spots on the field that he wants and make the catch, you know? And so, you know, maybe he definitely doesn't look as fast as the Texas A&M kid, but he's somebody that can move the chains. And then, you know, once you get down the red zone, he's a reliable target. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely not, I don't think, doesn't have the ceiling as some of these other receiver as some of these other guys that we talked about. Like, I don't think that he's going to be this type of guy that's going to catch 65 passes for 1,000 yards, you know,
right,
or anything like that. But he's going to give you production from that position. He's going to catch some passes. He's going to be a good red zone guy. I agree with his blocking. He, to me, is more of a mirror blocker than a guy that's really an impact blocker. Like, he kind of is in the right position and he's doing his job, but he's not exactly, you know, a guy that's going to make a huge impact or that you're going to see finish, you know, blocks really well and you know, kind of take on responsibilities. One thing, you know, that stands out always to me about Gronk when we watch Patriots film of him is that he is schemed into their running plays as being an awesome blocker. Like, the Patriots know that they're going to get awesome blocking from Gronk, so they kind of plan on running the ball behind him a lot of the time, or using him, you know, on whams or movement blocks or stuff like that, where he is a huge factor in what the execution of the play is going to be. So in terms of that, Caden Smith is not going to be that kind of guy, at least not right away. He's going to be more of a mirror type of guy that you're going to be able to give an assignment to on the edge or something like that, and he's going to be able to kind of get by, but he's not going to necessarily be the focal point of the running game. Gronk is really the focal point of the Patriots running game, and you know, a lot of the time in terms of blocking, in terms of blocking teams. So that's what really separates him from a lot of other guys. So I don't think Caden Smith's going to be that guy, but I just love his hands. Like, we were talking about that drill where they run these guys through the – I forget what they call it. I think it's the gauntlet or something like that, where they run sideline to sideline and they just catch, like, five passes. Yeah. Bro, this guy's going to look good in that.
Yes, exactly.
He's going to pluck the ball. He's going to move well. He's going to look good in, you know, the underwear Olympics. I definitely think that that's going to be the case. But, you know, I don't think that he is going to be this type of guy that's going to catch, you know, like I said, like to have 1,000-yard seasons and stuff like that. Those are more the guys at the top of the draft. We're talking this guy, I think Caden Smith is probably like a low-end tight end one or high-end tight end two in the league, and not necessarily like a Pro Bowler or anything like that, which is kind of a good segue into this next guy, Isaac Nnata out of Georgia, who there's a lot of varying opinions, I feel like, on him. Like that, he are very high on him, and a lot of people like me are kind of lukewarm. I liked what I saw when he was given the opportunity, but that was a loaded offense. The whole time that he was there, there's a ton of mouths to feed in that offense, so that's part of it. Right. But he really wasn't a guy that pops as like a great receiver.
He, out of the guys that we watched, he was one of the guys that I was just sort of. I wasn't blown away by really by anything, you know.
He's good, he's a nice player.
I don't see him coming into the NFL and wrecking shop. I mean, I hope he does for his sake,
right.
but you know, like I, you know, even for somebody who looks as strong as he is, he wasn't as dominant of a blocker as I wanted him to be.
He
was able to, you know, get open and make some catches here and there, but he was never somebody where I looked at where I felt like, okay, if he's the only option, he's going to be able to beat double teams. He's going to be able to, you know, make big plays. He's going to be able to, you know, really make a difference. I never got that sense from him, from any of the film I watched. And I saw a lot of them just, you know, over the course of his career at Georgia.
Yeah.
He's a good player. I just, you know, I don't see like a real superstar potential out of him.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on this one. He's a very vertical receiver too. Like he's best really when he's running the seam or, you know, really getting upfield on like a go route or something like that. He's not a guy that's very shifty.
No.
That has directions and stuff like that on a dime. So he's really more of a vertical guy. I think he has above average burst off the line of scrimmage. He ran by some guys that you see on the tape every once in a while. He getting vertical on a linebacker or something like that and running by some dudes and making some catches that way. I think his blocking is good, but again, not great, not an impact blocker, but good enough to get by in the NFL. I think we're really starting to talk about some guys here with Nnata and Caden Smith who are really like high-end tight end twos at their ceilings and not necessarily a focal point of a passing attack or a star player in an offense. But I know a lot of people that really like him. A lot of people kind of have him in that, like, right after that, top big three, so to speak, of Hawks and Fawn and Irv Smith, that he's kind of a lot of people's next guy is Isaac Nnata. Maybe it's the Georgia thing. He played on a great team and did enough and played in some big games where he had some, big cat individual catches, not necessarily like 200-yard games or anything like that, but just, you know, a couple of big catches in some big playoff games and stuff like that. So maybe that has something to do with it too. But he's good. He's fine. I think if you drafted him in like the fourth round, or something like that. Yeah. You miss on everybody on the top guys. You wait till the fourth round, you pick them up. You have a guy that, you know, can probably like outpace Dwayne Allen. You know, like he can probably Dwayne Allen on the roster. And he's just, I don't think he's the next Gronk. That's all we're saying. But the next guy I am very high on for no reason.
No.
No, I have reason because a lot of people saw my tight end rankings and were like, who? And I was like, I'm telling you,
good, though.
Haley Waring from San Diego State people are gonna notice him at the combine. Like he's gonna kill the combine.
Yeah.
He only has 19 collegiate games. He really didn't play a whole lot of college football. But when you watch this guy run and watch him move at his size, it's just like it's like, you know, you're having an epiphany. Like, okay, like, this is like a true hidden gem, like high ceiling player that you can get later on in the draft that could turn into a star for you.
He's got a nice frame. I want to see what his wingspan is.
He's a giant.
Yeah, he looks big.
Yeah,
you know, I remember you're like, oh, check out this guy.
Yeah,
I watched his Nevada tape. I was like, Jesus. Like
he dominated that game. Yeah, like, it was wild.
Yeah. So the thing, here's a couple things I like about him. First off, San Diego State's a good program. Like,
yeah,
they're one of those like good mid-major, I don't know what you call it, program. Like a group of five teams. They're a good program. They run the ball a lot. They're one of these teams that's under center a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they are a very physical football team. I'm sure that Belichick likes how they play. You know, with their tight ends, he doesn't ask their tight ends to just run routes and or just do this or just do that. He asks them to do a lot. And so, you know, when you watch him play, obviously his athleticism stands out a lot. But he's also out of the guys I saw, that I really, really got a chance to study, is he does have good effort and technique in blocking too. I don't think he's a minus blocker either. I don't see him as just like this great athlete who can catch passes. I think, you know, I don't think he would be on the field there if he was. If he wasn't a good blocker, but I like on the tape too, he puts in the effort. He finishes his blocks. He's got good technique. I like him a lot. Like if this is a guy that slips or doesn't do great at the combine, I think this is a guy that you'd be really happy with taking a little bit later because I think he could be a steal. He's an impressive player. I like him a lot.
Yeah. There's one a touchdown that I put on Twitter in his thread where he just absolutely shakes the, I think it's a linebacker, it might be a safety, with a post corner route where he like sinks his hips and explodes out of the route like he's a wide receiver. And I saw that, it's on that Nevada tape, and I saw that and I was like, all right, this guy has some like rare athletic skills. Like he's not just a vertical guy, like a guy like Nada that we were just talking about, who's just going to run down the field in the straight line. This guy can sink his hips and shift in and out of routes and has really great change of direction skill. Now, at the same time, he didn't play a lot of college football, as I said earlier on, and I think that he's very raw still in a lot of areas. He also struggled a little bit with drops, so that's something to look out for as well. But in terms of, like, this is what we do this for, right? In terms of these hidden gems and these guys that, you know, other people aren't high on, when you watch a guy like this, you see, oh, man, like, this guy is – no one knows who this guy is. And and he can really play. If he was at a bigger school, and San Diego State, like you said, is a great program. I mean, Rashad Penny just got drafted out of the first round out of the Seahawks running back now. So it's not that it's a bad program, but if he was playing at you know, one of the big programs like an Ohio State or an Alabama or a Georgia, like everybody would know who this guy was. So
on the West Coast.
Yeah. West Coast doesn't help either. And he's also got, you know, I know that this is kind of one of those things about tight ends. He used to play basketball. He was going to be a basketball player at San Diego State. Didn't work out, so he ended up trying to switch over to football. So he has that, like, jump ball, you know, rebound-type aspect of his game to him that a lot of those basketball converts have. You know, guys like Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez. Obviously, I'm not saying he's going to be one of those guys, but that's kind of where that stereotype kind of comes from.
Yeah.
So he has that ability, too. And you can also see some of the basketball skill with the quick feet and stuff like that come through as well. I mean, I just think that if you're going to draft a guy, if you're going to wait on the position, you're going to draft a guy on day three of the draft, this is the type of guy you want to draft. You know, you don't want to draft one of those guys that's going to just be who he is and be a third string tight end, like a Ryan Izzo, for example. Like fine player, but we all know who Ryan Izzo is, and he's probably not going to get much better. I think, you know, Waring is the type of guy that really has a very high ceiling, and, you know, he could bust, he could be nobody, but at the same time, he could, that's the volatility that you want on day three. I just, in terms of like the guys that you could draft, I just feel like taking the chance and hoping that you can put together all that athleticism into a good player is such a better investment to me than taking a chance on some of these other guys at the end of the draft that are just who they are. They just are who they are at this point.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how the Patriots would probably look at it too. I mean, look at what they did with Keon Crossan.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he was somebody who they said, all right, this is an incredible athlete. You know, yeah. He played at a very small school. Like, it's late in the draft. Let's see if we can get something out of him. He made the 53-man roster. He played on special teams.
He was
an active player. You know, you can get something out of guys like that.
Yeah, he made the active roster. He played on special teams. Made some really good plays in the kicking game. By the end of the season, crossing a lot of the players on the team were like, this guy's one of the best special teamers that we have in this building. You know, he's going to be right up there with Matthew Slater and Jonathan Jones and all those guys and within a couple of years. And then you see him covering Tyreek Hill in the AFC Championship game a little bit. You had a sleeper guy that's a local kid that you like too.
Yeah, I really loved Tommy Sweeney. And yeah. it's maybe it's because I've seen so much of him in person and I develop a bias. But I really do think he's one of these guys that, you know, this is another – Boston College is another school that really values the tight end position.
Yeah, didn't they play like three tight ends at once?
Yeah, they have seven on this year's roster, you know.
So
it's not uncommon for them to like have three or four tight ends catch passes in a single game. They love like two, three tight end sets and all that stuff. So sometimes his numbers might not look as great because they're spreading that his balls around to a lot of different guys, but he's a good blocker. He's a really underrated athlete. I'm very curious to see what he runs. He's a big guy. He's somebody that has really good hands.
Yeah.
He can make the sort of the sort of sneaky spectacular catch because he's just been somebody that, you know, throughout his whole career, he's just sort of found a way to produce. And, you know, he does a good job getting open and runs good routes. Another guy with a pretty high floor, I think, in the NFL.
Yeah, he's got great hands. Like, he's got great natural hands. Like, all the things we've been talking about today about kind of what you look for when you see a guy plucking the ball out of the air. Really, he's got great hands. And I was actually pretty impressed with his route running, too. Mm. The most explosive guy, but he seems to be kind of like a tactician with his route running, really understands how to run routes and has got a pretty good IQ of how to beat guys in certain coverages and that type of stuff. I think you could do a whole lot worse than him, that's for sure, especially in the point of the draft that he's going to go. And like you said, that BC offense, he's got a plenty of workload. He certainly has a lot of experience and understands, and I think he could probably hang with guys in the blocking game too, in the running game and blocking dudes. And he's a good prospect. I mean, I think that a lot of these BC guys, usually, guys like Zach Allen and him and some of these other guys, aren't necessarily the best athletes, or at least that's the perception. And maybe they can prove some people wrong this week at the combine about their athleticism, but they are all seem to be very well coached. Very fundamentally sound, very well coached, and it shows up on tape.
Yeah, and BC kind of prides itself on being a physical running football team.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get a guy that in Sweeney that comes into the league and doesn't want to block as much.
Yeah.
He loves it. You know, I mean, those guys have to love it or else they're not getting recruited.
Yeah.
At BC. So, I think he's going to be a solid player in the NFL.
Yeah. It sounds like a Patriot to me. I know that if you don't block as a receiver in New England, tight end, wide receiver, or whoever you are, you could be Randy Moss. You're not playing for Bill Belichick and that team. So blocking is a big thing for them. I'm going to put you on the spot quickly. Is there one guy at the combine this week that you really kind of excited to watch?
Ooh. Well, you know what? I mean, the guy that I really want to see In terms of arm strength or quarterbacks is Will Greer.
Yeah. You know, I was going to go quarterback too, but a different one. But yeah.
I know who yours is going to be.
Yeah.
but see, the thing with Greer is that when you watch him during a game, like I watched a lot of his games as they happen this year.
Yeah.
And I just love – and plus, back even when he was back at Florida, he has this swagger about him.
Yeah, moxie.
Oh, God. He's like the Texas game, and I talk about it all the time. Texas come down and scores, and you could see in the camera shot of the West Virginia as they're about to come onto the field, Greer's smiling.
Yeah.
He loves it.
Yeah.
He wants to have the ball that last drive, but he's got. But when he throws the ball and he gets like panicky, he just sort of throws those flutters up for grabs. You're really worried, and you're thinking like, you know, guys like Mahomes can get away with it because they have a cannon. Is Greer's arm strength going to be so bad that it's going to really scare teams off when he goes into that mode?
Yeah, so one of my followers pointed this out to me the other day, and I did some digging on it. The Patriots actually have a pretty solid threshold when it comes to throw velocity. It's something – I don't know if they're watching it at the combine or if they're watching it on tape and kind of projecting velocity because they got, you know, Ernie Adams and all the mathematicians capable of doing that. But 56 miles per hour seems to be like a sweet spot for them. And if you're below that, you're not getting drafted by the Patriots early. You know, guys like Lamar Jackson, for example, who only threw 49 last year, that's probably what, you know, ended up taking him completely off their board was the fact that he couldn't hit that, right?
Right. And
Jacoby Brissett, 56 on the dot. Jimmy Garoppolo, 56 on the dot. Danny Etling even was up there. He threw – so now they do it left and right because they throw both directions. So before it was just one number. So – I can't remember which one was left and which one was right, but Etling actually hit 54 and 56. So he, for a seventh-round pick, he was up there in terms of throw velocity. A lot of the guys that we talked about last year, Logan Woodside and Kyle Luletta and all those perfect Patriots, right? All those guys didn't sniff 56, and they were never going to be that guy. So the question is for Greer and for my guy, Brett Ripon, out of Boise State, is – can they hit that number where the Patriots feel comfortable drafting them in the second or third round? I think that with Greer, my biggest thing, and I want to, you know, kind of keep hammering this because I think that mechanically he's not all there. He has a pretty deliberate release. You know, it's a slow kind of windmill type of release. It's not the Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, get it out in half a second, you know, type thing. And like you said, his footwork and his kind of gunslinger mentality resembles more of like what Patrick Mahomes would do or Kyler Murray would do, but he doesn't have that cannon.
Right.
At least we don't think. I mean, maybe
no, I don't think he does.
Yeah. So in the NFL,
but I don't think he does.
Right. And so in the NFL, he's going to have to change a lot. You know, he's going to have to really hone that in and really become a pocket passer. And that can still throw it deep, don't get me wrong, because he's got a great deep ball, great touch and accuracy and all that stuff with the deep ball. But he's going to have to hone that in a lot at the NFL level because the game winner against Texas, like, I don't even know what he did with his feet. Like, it was like a jump shot. And then it was bizarre. I've never really seen anything like that. And he doesn't have the arm strength to get away with that at the next level. So... No. That's going to be a big thing. And the good thing about it is if the Patriots do draft Greer in the second round, let's say he's got a couple of years to learn under Tom Brady and to kind of realize his limitations at the NFL level and go from there. With Ripon, I think that he is already knows who he is, which is a big you know, thing that I really like about him. He has that quick release. He has good footwork in the pocket. He knows he needs to be good at the details because he's not necessarily the most natural passer. So that's where all of his ball placement comes from. The question is he going to have the velocity either? You know, is he going to be a guy that can hit that, you know, illustrious 56 miles an hour? You know, it's going to be interesting to see because with quarterbacks these days, like Will Greer, Mahomes is kind of setting a bad trend in a way.
Yeah.
You know, where like it's like not everybody's Patrick Mahomes.
No.
And Kyler Murray is now going to make it even worse because Kyler has that baseball background too. So you see him make all sorts of weird throws and his feet aren't set and he's throwing off platform and he's throwing these little touch passes with his feet all over the place and he gets away with it because he's got a great arm. So don't try to mimic Patrick Mahomes, kids. Is right. What I'm saying, like, he's not the type of guy that you're going to be able to mimic unless you have that kind of arm strength. I expect Kyler Murray to throw like 60 miles an hour and just like have an absolute cannon. That's who he is. But that's not who Will Greer is. So it's going to be very interesting to see the other quarterback, just to touch on it quickly, Daniel Jones from Duke. He's going to be a guy that's going to get mocked a lot to the Patriots because his quick passing game is what he's best at. You know, quick drop, get the ball out, these intermediate and short passes, you let his receivers do the work. That's kind of his MO. That's what he's really best at. So that's kind of why you're seeing him mock so much for the Patriots. But I watch him and I see a lot of Ryan Tannehill, which scares the crap out of me. So I don't know. And then to talk about him in the first round, I think is pretty ridiculous.
Like, yeah.
He's really not. And I know that Cutcliffe and the Manning connection and all, like a lot of people are making a big deal out of that and how he had these like kind of mentors to tootle, you know, to really work with him through his collegiate career. I saw today somebody said he's the most pro-ready quarterback in this class, which is not even true. Yeah, so I think that there, you got to be careful with him. But at the same time, he has that kind of quick release and he's very good in the quick passing game. He's a very good pre-snap reader. Like, he knows exactly where he's going with the ball most of the time, and that's what helps him get rid of the ball quickly, whether it's man or zone. He knows where the weaknesses are in that coverage, where the matchup is, where he's going to go with it. You could do worse. I just think that in the first round, it's a definite
rule.
Those three quarterbacks, I tweeted this out the other day, that's kind of the sweet spot for the Patriots. You know, Haskins and Kyler Murray are going to be off the board. Drew Lock, I assume, is going to be off the board too. I just can't imagine if Josh Allen went top 10. Drew Lock's a better version of Josh Allen, so I just don't see why he wouldn't. Haskins, to me, is I can't believe that he's not getting more number one pick pub. My guess is because of Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams are just so good that it's tough. But I just don't get why Haskins isn't every single box.
It doesn't make sense. The funny thing, too, is that he played at Ohio State.
Yeah, it's like he had like one of the best seasons in Ohio State football history. It's like
And he's big. Like, and I can say, and people could say, well, you know, like, well, JT Barrett was a good player, but like, Haskins is big too. You know, like,
he asked me the other day what the difference. I thought there was no difference between him and Cardell Jones, and I was just that's not good.
Dude, he's a passer. He's a good pass. He's a good rhythm passer. He can hit it to all areas of the field. There are times where he misses makeable throws, but everybody does.
Yeah.
And like he got so much better by the end of the season. My God, he was lethal.
Yeah.
By the end of the season.
In the Rose Bowl, he was unbelievable. The first half of the Rose Bowl was probably the best half of football any of these quarterbacks have played in this class.
Yeah. Yeah. He was awesome. And so I don't understand. We're still not at the point yet where, you know, where everything's going to happen. There's still a lot of time between now and the draft where a lot can happen. So this number one stuff with Haskins could pick up. You never know.
I just see like, this isn't the quarterback show, so I'm gonna end it here, I swear. But you see these other teams, like when the Rams traded up for Goff and then the Eagles traded up for Wentz. Like, Arizona's sitting there, they're claiming at least publicly that they're sticking with Josh Rosen. Like, if I'm them, like, that number one pick, and I get that the defensive line prospects are really good, but that number one pick for Haskins, like, I think later in this process, like a month from now or even right after the combine, we're going to hear about them shopping that number one pick for a team that needs a quarterback that's going to want to move up for Haskins, because they can drop back to like 5 or 6. Like, let's say the Giants end up deciding that they're going to outbid everybody and move up for Haskins and put him behind Eli and go from there. they can go to that 5 or 6 reign and still get like a Rashawn Gary or an Ed Oliver or somebody like that, who maybe not as good as Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams, but he's still a really good player. Now you have all these picks, obviously, because you're going to get a ton of picks from that trade. So now you have all this, you know, war chest of picks that you got from that trade. And I don't know. I don't know what box, like, I guess maybe like he only had 1 year as the starter. Maybe that's like, like a lot of, you know, the Bill Parcells checkbox thing says like, you had to have at least started, like, I think it's like 50 games or something like that. Mm. And he doesn't quite do that, but I don't know. He seems to me like he's as good as any, you know, prospect over the last couple of years, at least. Maybe not as good as Baker, but certainly like right in that conversation with the rest of those guys, Darnold and Allen and Josh Wilson and Lamar. Last year. So, but yeah, we'll save that for another time when we really get into these quarterbacks, even though we just did a little bit. But, you know, it's all fun and games, but Adam and I could obviously talk about this all night. We're going to be back next week with another position group. Maybe we'll stick to the offensive side of the ball and go with running backs or maybe even quarterbacks. Although I was trying to save that one for later. So we'll see what happens. But I'll be at the combine all week, so I'll certainly be, hitting all of that and try to talk to as many players as I can. Obviously, we'll be watching, like the rest of you, the on-field drills and the 40s and all that type of stuff. Adam, is there anything you got coming down?
There's just a bill that's being proposed in Massachusetts to ban tackle football under eighth grade, like seventh graders and unders can't play tackle football. I've just started talking to coaches about that and what that might mean if it does go through. I don't necessarily think it will, but it's that, I mean, that's something that'd be like a game changer for youth sports here. And, you know, a lot
especially
of people,
how these college programs are like recruiting guys in like the eighth grade now.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like that kid's already committed to so-and-so. It's like, what, he's in seventh grade? Like,
yeah, that's a pretty crazy idea. It's a pretty crazy idea.
That is. And I think the one thing about it is too, is that it's almost better to have them learn at a young age how to tackle properly.
Yes.
Because then you get to these, like into high school and stuff like that, and their technique is all over the place, and they're tackling with their head in, or they're doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing because they don't have the reps and the practice at a young age of how to actually properly tackle somebody.
Well, that's one of the things that guys are saying is like, well, by the time you're in high school, the kids are much bigger.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to do it right, you're going to get hurt. So it's just going to actually be more, this could cause more injuries.
Yeah.
Down the line from sort of a big picture perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hope that bill doesn't pass. I think that tackle football, when it's taught properly and all that kind of stuff, is what we need for this sport to keep growing. But the sport's going to grow pretty good at the combine. Going to be 300 guys that are going to be in the NFL next year, pretty much all of them at least. Some of them that weren't invited will probably be in the combine in the NFL too. Shaq Mason, a good example. A couple of different Patriots that were non-invitees to the combine that are now obviously stars for the Pats. So not all everybody there there's guys that deserve to be there that aren't there, but for the most part they get everybody on that invite list. So until next week, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.